Welcome, everyone, to this WebSphere Support Technical Exchange session. Today's topic is WebSphere MQ Serviceability, Solving Problems Effectively. Today's presenters are Barry Robbins and Justin Fries. Barry has worked with IBM for over 30 years. For the last 24 years, he has worked in customer support, including support of the Kix and TX series products. In 2002, Barry joined the WebSphere MQ support team, where he is currently responsible for resolving customer problems as they relate to WebSphere MQ for distributed platforms. Justin has been supporting IBM messaging since joining the WebSphere MQ support team in 1997. He also supports IBM Message Site and formerly supported the Service Integration Bus messaging provider and WebSphere application server. Justin focuses primarily on Unix and Linux systems, for which he has written a number of diagnostic utilities, but works to improve WebSphere MQ serviceability on all platforms. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Justin.
Thank you, David, and welcome everyone to the presentation. Let's get started by going to the next foil, please. So, in this presentation today, we're going to talk a bit about the diagnostics that WebSphere MQ gathers. In addition, we're going to talk about the sort of data that you need to gather if you have a problem with WebSphere MQ and you anticipate that you may need to open a problem record with IBM. We'll also talk about some new technologies you may not be aware of for automating how to gather data about WebSphere MQ problems. And we'll spend a little bit of time talking about how to analyze that data and also how to share it with IBM support in the most effective manner. So let's carry on to the next foil, please. Slide 3. WebSphere MQ Diagnostics. And the next foil, please. And at this point, allow me to turn it over to Barry Robbins.
Good morning, everyone. So we're going to talk about primarily the always available documentation that MQ collects. They're always active. They're always available. The rare case may be if you run out of disk space or if you have a full file system. Rather than that, in most cases, you'll always have these two items. The first is the error logs. There are two sets of three files, and these files will roll over and constantly track information associated with your environment. The names shown here for both sets are the same for both sets. The latest or most current information will always be available in AMQ ERR 01. They contain informational messages, warnings, and errors. The second type of information that we always produce are FTC files or FFST files. These files are created when unexpected errors occur and contain extended information. Let's go on to the next slide, please. The Queue Manager uses shared resources to communicate with itself and its applications. For processes connected to the Queue Manager, error messages are routed to the Queue Manager's error logs, which is one of the two sets of these files. The default locations are shown here. However, if you create your own queue manager, or if you create your queue manager to exist in a different directory, just note the error logs exist under the errors directory, under the queue manager directory, and that would happen if you're doing multi-instance, for example. All other messages are located in the following directory, which is the var mqm errors or the mqtop errors directory. For Unix and Linux systems, this directory is fixed. You can't alter it. For Windows, the directory exists based on the product installation location. By the way, the file sizes for these error logs, each of the three files in the set are 256K. There is an option to increase those to 1 meg, and that's covered within the documentation of the product. Next foil, please. Error messages always...
I was just announcing that we're on foil number 6.
Messages always include an identifier and basic text. For distributed MQ, begin with AMQ as the leader for the message. Interactive messages, when we talk about interactive messages, what we mean is if you enter a command incorrectly, you will get something like a AMQ 8146 that will pop back on your screen. When it comes to the error logs, details actually include things like local date and time, PID, TID, user, program, instance, as far as which installation you have in place, the VRMF or the version release modification level of the queue manager in question. An explanation of the message will also be included, suggested action to handle the message, And for us, there's a piece at the very end that tells us the MQ source file and line which generated the error message. It helps us pin within the source code exactly where we reported the error. The message can contain two numeric values and three string inserts. Numeric values might be number of files involved in a particular error. String inserts would probably be the objects like a queue name or channel name. We'll have some samples of these later in the presentation. Let's move on to page 7, please. Like the high-level error logs, FFST files are written in these two directories, the top-level directories. They're fixed. They can't be changed once you install the product. The naming of these files is shown here, made up of the AMQ header, followed by the PID identifier, followed by a sequence number. And we'd only use that if we can't write to the file for some reason. That very rarely happens, but just so you know, it doesn't mean a different TID. All the threads associated for that particular process are contained within the same file. Let's move on to FOIL 8, please. The FDCs are made up of the following components: the header, the function stack, trace history, component dumps, and the environment. The key components from a customer perspective are always going to be the header and the environment. The majority of the time when it comes to the function stack, the trace history, the component dumps, those would tend to be more for the support organizations within IBM. Move on to FOIL 9, please. And now we're going to talk about WebSphere MQ must gathers, and let's move on to FOIL 10. And I'll turn it back over to Justin.
Thanks, Barry. So must gathers are a term that I imagine many of you on this call have run into, whether you're talking about MQ or other products like WebSphere Application Server. WebSphere MQ must gathers, or must gathers in general, are tech notes on the IBM website that describe the kind of data you will need to gather for IBM to diagnose a particular kind of problem. And sometimes must gatherers have links to additional tools, things that aren't normally shipped with the product, to help gather unusual data. The tools that you need to gather most sorts of data are already part of MQ or WebSphere App Server, but sometimes we need specialist tools. For WebSphere MQ, the must gatherers are first organized by the type of platform, and then underneath that, they're organized by a symptom like channel problems or an area of the product like logging. Let's go on to FOIL 11, please. Here's a snapshot taken just a few days ago of the main index page for the WebSphere MQ must gathers, and you can find a link for this page at the end of the presentation on FOIL 38, I think it is. As you can see at the top, we have tabs for a number of different products. Linux, Unix, and Windows are all together on one tab. IBM i is separate, as is ZOS and a few others. And I've shown as an example here the list of must-gather topics for Linux and Unix, which covers everything from clients and channels and clustering and data conversion, database, Java, JMS, a lot of topics, including some that we have plans to add. We intend to add one, for example, about advanced message security for people who are using that. If you do run into a problem with MQ and you refer to this index and don't find the topic that you need, there is a generic entry at the bottom, other general or unknown problems, which lists the information to gather. However, if you look at the list and say, gosh, they really should include this, please submit feedback on the page. It'll come to us and we'll look at it very carefully. We're always happy to increase the list as needed. Let's go to FOIL number 12. So, an individual must gather is going to tell you what kind of diagnostic information to gather when a problem is happening, if that's possible. Sometimes a problem will have already taken place, and all you can do is look at the data that Barry described earlier, the FDCs and the error logs, whatever information that MQ gathered. But if a problem is ongoing right now, like you have a channel that you can't get started, then the must gathers will tell you how to generate some extra data. In many cases, that involves turning on a WebSphere MQ trace, allowing the problem to occur, and then stopping the trace. And then secondly, every must gather will describe how to gather all the information that IBM would want, which can include traces if you gathered them, or if you didn't, it'll get the files that Barry described earlier, as well as a lot of other information about your system. And for each must gather, we provide instructions on how to gather data automatically and also how to do so manually, which used to be the only option. So let's go to slide 13. And here is an example. This is taken from, I believe, the cluster must gather, which starts to show the two steps. Step one, generating data. This is something you can do if the problem is recreatable or if it's happening right now. These are the steps that you should follow. If the problem has already happened and it's done in past, then you can skip right ahead to step number two, collecting the data that's already on your system. And here you'll notice that there are two expandable sections. If you look on the right, you'll see little plus signs, which you can use to expand those. Collect WebSphereMQ data automatically with RunMQ RAS, or collect WebSphereMQ data manually. So let me explain what those are by going on to the next FOIL. Slide 14, here is an example of the second option, collect WebSphereMQ data manually. This is just taken a few days ago, again, from the cluster must gather. And there's a lot of stuff to do. By the way, the font may be a little bit small to read on this floor. It's not necessary that you actually be able to read it, just to see that there's a lot to gather. We want information about your operating system and MQ, the software levels, maintenance applied, error logs, FDC files, information about your object definitions, and at the bottom, number 8 there, something specific for clustering problems, is we have a tool called AMQRFDM, which is shipped with the product, and that can display information about what's going on inside MQ's head with regard to clustering. And there are specific instructions about how to run that tool to gather a what we call a cluster repository dump. I don't know how many people on the call have had to do that. I'm sure some of you probably have done so. Ultimately, you can work your way through all 8 steps. It's very possible to do, but there is a better way, a way that can save you a lot of trouble. And also, if you're concerned, if you look at a long list about saying, well, I'm not entirely sure how to do all of these things, or what if I don't do it quite right, I think you'll like the next option, which is on slide 15. Automatic data collection with RunMQ RAS. And let's go to slide 16, and I'll explain what RunMQ RAS is. So RunMQ RAS is a tool that is shipped with recent versions of MQ, i.e., all the version 7 releases. It's available on most of the MQ platforms, including AIX, HPUX, IBMI, Linux, all the flavors of Linux, Solaris, and Windows. It is not available on ZOS. RunMQ RAS is also part of the MQ clients, which are downloadable from the Support Packs website. So MAC7, MAC71, MAC75, and there's a relatively new client, MAT1, which is for the nonstop operating system. By the way, about the name RunMQ RAS, people may wonder what on earth that means. RAS is an acronym that means Reliability, Availability, Serviceability. So this is the MQ tool, which is designed to provide a lot of those features when resolving problems. A key point about RunMQ RAS is that you really need to be at particular levels of MQ. RunMQ RAS, you should be at version 7.0.1.8 or later, at version 7.1.0.1 or later, or version 7.5, any level at all. Now, the keen-eyed amongst you may have noticed that RunMQ RAS was actually available in base 7.1.0, and it's been available in version 7.0 since 7.0.1.0. But it really wasn't complete. All it gathered was just the error logs and FDCs, pretty much, not much more than that. It didn't really gather enough information. We've since expanded it a great deal. And I will say that we continually expand what RunMQ RAS can do, and I'll explain that how we do that a little bit later. So let's go to slide 17. Slide 17, where is RunMQ RAS? Well, it comes in a couple of different pieces. The part that you're going to run is just a launcher script, which is in the MQ series, the WebSphereMQ bin directory. On most of the platforms, it's just called RunMQ RAS, and on Windows, it's runmqras.cmd. But when you're typing it at the Windows command prompt, you also just type RunMQ RAS. The guts of RunMQ RAS, the main program itself, are written in Java, and they're going to be under the Java lib directory, and there's the jar file for anyone who wishes to take look for it. It does require that you have Java 5 or later, which these days should be, I think, fairly universal. And then, perhaps most importantly, running QRAS is also an XML configuration file that tells the Java program what to do. The file is called isa.xml, ISA meaning IBM Support Assistant, which is something you may be familiar with from other products. It's in the bin directory on most platforms, except on Windows, where it's in the top-level installation directory, although on MQ701 on Windows, it was in a subdirectory called config. But if you just do a search for isa.xml, you'll find it pretty easily. Let's go to slide 18, please. So, what data does RunumQRAS collect? Well, that all depends on the isa.xml file that you use. The isa.xml file has two types of XML stanzas. One is a stanza labeled files, which describes, as you might expect, files to collect from the system. And then second is a type of stanza labeled commands that lists commands which the RunumQRAS tool should run and the output of which it should save. Each stanza also contains an attribute indicating what type of platform that stanza applies to. So it could be a file stanza for AIX, a command stanza for OS400, and so forth. And each stanza may also have an option, an attribute called the section name. Stanzas with no section name are collected by default. And stanzas with a name, you have to explicitly select. So by default, you will get a fair amount of information from MQ, certainly all the error logs and FTCs and a lot of information about your system and about MQ version levels. But for certain types of problems, like cluster problems, we'll certainly want to gather additional sections. It's worth pointing out, too, that the isa.xml file is pretty much the same on all platforms. I mean, you may see differences from one system to another based on your fixed pack level. But if you look at a isa.xml on a Windows system, you'll see all the information in there for how to gather information on Unix as well. Just that when you run RunumQRAS on your Windows system, it only picks out the Windows sections. Let's carry on to slide 19. So here's an example of the actual contents from a recent isa.xml. I'm showing two different sections, both for the AIX platform. The first is a files section, which describes how to gather several different files, but the path names may look a little strange to you. MQD:// errors, detail equals star, and MQD:: detail equals MQS.ini. Well, it seems that it's going for the top-level errors directory and for the MQS.ini file and several others, but these MQD:: and QMD:, that requires a little bit of explanation, which I'll get into on the next foil. Those are essentially little placeholders that will be replaced with particular path names on your system. Now, for the commands section below, this is a command section for AIX, and you'll notice that it actually has a section name of cluster. So this one will not be gathered by default. If you specify the cluster section name, then it's going to run five different commands. First is that AMQRFDM command. That's that cluster repository dump, which I mentioned earlier. It's listed in the manual section of the MustGather. But in addition to that, it's also going to browse several different system cluster queues, which actually goes beyond what we do currently in the manual MustGather instructions. We do that because it just is easier to gather things with RunumQRAS. So RunumQRAS will kind of go above and beyond the manual instructions. Why? Because we don't mind working RunumQRAS. It works for us. We can tell it what to do, and except that we don't want it to take too long to run. We don't have to be worried about it having to type everything out manually. So let's go to slide 19, or 20. Here are those substitution strings from the XML file. MQ:, for example, is the path where you have MQ installed. That used to be one fixed path name on each platform, but with MQ7.1 on most platforms, you can now install the product multiple times in different locations. So that's why a good example of why we use these little substitution strings. The RunumQRAS tool is smart enough to know what your path name is for a particular installation. And same thing for MQD:. That's the Webster MQ data path. It's true that, for example, on Unix, that will always be var MQM. But on Windows, it depends. It may be something like C program files x86/IBM/WebSphereMQ, or it might be somewhere else depending on where you've installed. And so on with the other substitution strings. One of the strings may require a little explanation. There's a string QM colon colon, which is the name of the queue manager. And then there's another one, SQM colon colon, which is the safe queue manager name. And what we mean by safe here is that it is a version of the queue manager name that is also an acceptable path name. So, for example, MQ allows forward slashes in queue manager names, like prod forward slash QMGR. But at least on the Unix system, you can't have a slash inside a file name. That's the path name separator. So on the platforms, we replace forward slashes with an ampersand. And we also replace dots, like prod dot queue manager would become prod exclamation point queue manager. That's more for historical reasons. Once upon a time, back in the DOS 8.3 file name days, you could only have one dot. And so we did that substitution. These days, I don't think that one is actually necessary, but we still do it. So let's carry on to slide number 21. What are the section names? Well, first of all, there's a section name, a virtual one, called all, which is special. It just means run mqras, gather every section out there. There's also a section name called default, which is the one that has no name. It's the one we gather by default anyway. You can still name it if you wish. Unusually, if you don't want to gather the default information, you can specify a section name of no default. Though, frankly, if you're collecting data for IBM, I really can't imagine right now the circumstance under which we wouldn't want to see that data. So other section names, cluster. This is where we're going to gather information about your cluster configuration and the status of your cluster queues. Defs refers to object definitions and also to status information. So it won't just show your channel definitions or your queue definitions. It will show channel status or queue status as well. And that's a very often information we want to see. I'd almost like to see that in the default section, but it isn't. Trace is another section name. And it's important to note about the trace section that RunMQRAS never itself runs a trace. It will only gather whatever files are in the top-level trace directory. So, if you remember, the must-gathers had two steps to start. Step one, generate data, if you can, because the problem's happening right now. And that's where we typically ask for trace. If you did that, be sure to turn on the section name of trace when you're doing runmqras, because we want to gather that data. Now, a question you might ask is, if you're gathering traces, do you want the trace files formatted or not? We'll leave it up to you. You don't have to format them. In fact, you can send them in, and we'll do so. If you do format the traces, then we'll work with those as well. Let's go to slide 22. A few more section names yet to go. DAP. This one was added in 7019, 7101, and 7501. DAP is an acronym in MQ that stands for the Data Abstraction and Persistence Layer. It deals with things like writing data to disk, to the queue files, and also dealing with transactions. Kernel, and by the way, the remainder of these under DAP are also added at the same fixed back level. Kernel refers to the queue manager's internal view of itself, what queues are open and what programs are connected and all the stuff that it knows about the queue manager. Logger section gathers information about the recovery logs. These aren't the error logs, but these are the logs that are named S000000.log and so forth that are used to recover objects and recover transactions. And then we have a section name of topic, which is for WebSphereMQ publish subscribe information. And then a new section that was added in 70111, 7103, and 7502 is QMGR in full case, uppercase. And this is basically a files section. If you remember the ISA.xml file, this one gathers files. It gathers all of the files for your queue manager, all the queues, all the logs, and all the rest of it. That's something we typically would not ask for. It would require an unusual sort of problem where we need to get your actual entire queue manager. But there have been cases where it has come up. So let's go on to slide 23. So how do you run this RunMQRAS thing? Well, the first thing to bear in mind is that if you have multiple installations on your system, whether it's Windows, Unix, or Linux, you should use the setmqenv command to set up an environment for that installation where you're having trouble. if you're on IBMI, you don't have to worry about this. Or if you're, for example, on the nonstop client as well, I don't think you have to. So once you're done entering you're setting up your environment, if necessary, then you're going to start typing out the runmq ras command. And for each section that you want, you can specify the minus section command line. And actually, the section names you just put in as a comma-separated list afterwards. Then again, for each queue manager, suppose you have more than one queue manager where you want to get information, you would use the QM list command option, and you would put queue manager's names as a comma-separated list. I should point out, though, by default, if you don't use the section, minus section flag, it will just get the default section. But for queue managers, if you don't use the minus QM list option, it's going to gather runmq ras data for every single queue manager on your system. So if you have a production system with one queue manager, no problem. If you have a dev system with 20, 30 queue managers, if that's how you roll, you may not want to gather them all. And another option that is very useful is the minus PMRNO option. This allows you to tag your data with your IBM problem record number if you have one open. So here's a couple of examples of runmq ras. Runmq ras minus QM list QMA. So we're only going to run against one queue manager. Minus section defs comma trace. So we'll get all the object definitions and status information. We're also going to gather whatever traces. Minus PMRNO, and then here we have an IBM problem number. The problem number, by the way, should be the full problem number. That's a five-digit number, comma, three-digit branch number, comma, three-digit country code. Now, the second option is a little simpler. Runmq ras minus section all minus PMR number, and I've got the PMR there. This one would gather a lot of data these days, because if you think about it, it's going to run against every queue manager on your system, and because I didn't use the QM list option, it would gather everything, including all of the queue manager files for every queue manager on the system. So you can see how if you're not careful, especially with that QM list option, things can get a little bit, you're going to get a lot of data, more than you want. So be very careful about selecting queue managers with the QM list option. Let's go to foil number 24 now. So what other options are there? Well, there are a few. The Information Center will list a few more even than I'm going to talk about because some aren't really frequently used. But there's a particular option that may be quite useful called minus work directory. And this basically gives the directory under which runmq ras is going to copy all the files that and command output that it's collecting. By default, that's going to be under the slash temp directory or whatever the percent temp percent variable points to on Windows. Now, if your temp directory doesn't have lots of free space and you're doing a runmq ras that's going to collect lots and lots of FTC files and traces, you may want to use a different location that has more space. In addition, there's an option, minus FTP IBM, exactly as written out there, that if you've given a problem record number, the runmq ras tool will create a standard FTP session up to IBM and upload the data directly to your PMR. So your PMR will get updated. The support team will know that the data is out there. An example of this is given below, runmq ras minus QM list QMB, comma QMC. So we're getting two queue managers, minus section desk, comma cluster, comma logger, comma trace. So we're getting more data. But we've given a work directory of slash var slash big data, presumably a file system with a lot of extra space. And we've given a problem record number, and we've said to FTP it directly to IBM. Again, one thing about the FTP to IBM, that is standard FTP. If you need to use secure transfer options, don't use minus FTP IBM. In particular, if any of the data that you're setting has got any kind of confidentiality requirements, if there's any kind of customer data in your traces or your logs, I recommend using secure FTP by going to the IBM website. And each must gather at the bottom does have a link to instructions on how to do that. But if you're just gathering trace of a problem on a development system, you can certainly use minus FTP IBM if it's acceptable to you. Let's go to foil number 25, please. Analyzing WebSphereMQ data. And for this, I'm going to turn back to Mr. Barry Robbins.
Okay. So earlier we talked about the standard always available diagnostic information. As Justin talked about, must gather, run MQ RAS. These items are collected as part of that activity. What I like to do is recommend that before you open a PMR and forward this information to IBM, you take a few minutes to see if you can identify the problem resolution yourself. The reason for that is many of the problems that we report in error logs and FTC files are documented through various information items available on the IBM site to help you resolve the problems yourself. Let's move on to FOIL 26. So we talked about error logs. Error logs should be the first point when you're reviewing the problem in your environment. Focus on, as I said, the first error log, err01.log files. Following that, you can move on to the FFST files or FTC files, and there you want to focus on the header and the environment sections. The header provides key information or key items to be used for the search for your search activity. Let's move on to FOIL 27. So what are the common uses that you would look for, common problems you would look for? Information in the error logs, channel problems, security failures, clustering issues, log file management, process availability, queue manager, object issues. These are the type of things that will record events in the error logs. If we move on to FOIL 28, here's a sample message, one I hope no one ever receives, but unfortunately they do happen. You can see the top section I mentioned earlier where it contains the installation information. It contains the VRM, F information, the version release modification levels. It provides a queue manager name. When you're looking at the high-level directory, that's common for all queue managers, so you'll need to be able to say, is this my queue manager that is test 1 or is it test 2 or whatever. Following that is the message, which is the AMQ, in this case 7472, and a string that basically says, here's what we found. We found a damaged object. We provide you with an explanation on what that means, where we talk about the object has been marked damaged. We found that it was an inconsistent state. We then provide you with options on actions you can take depending on your environment, when it can or cannot be recovered. If you're running, in this case, you're running linear logging, yes, we could recover the object. Either as if it occurs during restart, we'll do that at that time, or you can manually try and restart it. If you're running circular logging, the options are to quickly delete and recreate because we do not provide object recovery in circular logging environments. So that's a sample error message, and if you're going to do searches, start searching on the message number if it doesn't provide you enough details in the two sections that talk about explanation action. Moving on to FOIL 29, FFST files. Now, there's a lot of information in the header. This is generally the first part of an FTC file. A lot of this information is more of greater value for IBM than it is for you, but there are five areas that I think you should look for that'll provide you information that you can use when you're doing your searches. You have the probe ID, the component, the program name, the major error code, and the comments. If we move on to FOIL 30, here's a sample of one we've pulled out, and it's actually the one on the previous page. So there's the probe ID, XY129037. These probe IDs can only be issued at one point within the product. We do not reuse a probe ID in multiple places, so that gives us a very exact location within the product that this error is being reported. And believe it or not, in most cases, searching on just the probe ID will get you an answer. But once you do your search on the probe ID, then you can start looking at, is it the same component that this is being reported against? Is it the same major error code? Does the program name match or is something similar? Is the comment similar? For this one here, I will tell you that if you do a search on that probe ID, the very first hit you'll get on the IBM site will be the answer to this problem. So it's a very quick and easy way for you to say, here's what I had happen, and the solution is right there with all the details and all the steps necessary to address the issue. If we go on to FOIL 31, here's another one. Same type of deal. The probe ID, the component, the major error code, the program name, the comment. If you search on the probe ID, you will find the rest of the information will match up on the very first hit. Now, that's not always the case. These are two fairly common ones we see. But again, if you start with the probe ID, and if you get a hit that matches up, great. If not, then let's do a search on the probe ID and the component. Let's see what we can find. If you get too many hits, get more specific with the major error code. You should be able to find, as I stated earlier, the majority of your problems have already been documented out there with their reason, if it is a fix of the product required, or if there's an action you can take to mitigate the problem. Let's move on to FOIL 32. There is a utility that we also ship with the product, because when you get FDCs, you get generally not one, but you get several. And the question is, okay, where do I start? Which one do I look at? And by the way, as I mentioned, an FDC can contain multiple failures within it because all threads within that process use the exact same file. So trying to figure out exactly where to start or which FDC to look at isn't really that straightforward. So we actually provide a utility called FFST summary. And all I have to do is go to the errors directory and run this command, and it will spit out information associated with the FDC files that you have in that directory. They'll contain the file name, the date and time, the program name, process and thread, the probe ID, the component, major and minor error codes. Before we go forward, I will let you know that for those of you who might have installed 7104 already, we did break this at 7104. We are working to repair it, and that should be corrected by 7105, but just be aware that that particular version, this utility does not work. So let's go on to FOIL 33. So here's some sample output, and the reason I chose this one is to show you that there are three files involved, but you can see how we throw out one FDC, then we have another file contain another, followed by another file containing two more, followed by going back to the first file, three more events. These are in time order. You can see that we spit out to sub-second level. But you'd always want to start at the top based on again, having a reasonably clean or managed file system. If the date doesn't match today, look for the first one for the day. If you're not one that keeps your FTC files cleaned up, you could have FTC files that could be months, and I've actually seen cases years old. So make sure you look at the date and make sure that the FTC you're chasing is appropriate to the time of your events. That's the basics of FFST summary. Again, it gives you that who came first? What was my first problem? Start at the top, work your way down. With that, let's move on to FOIL 34. So working with IBM support. Well, we've covered a lot of information here about the MustGather and the RunMQ RAS and the diagnostics that are available and some of the things you can do for yourself. But there are going to be times where you're going to need to reach out to us for assistance. And so when you do that, if we move on to FOIL 35, we do have a few items that we'd like to pass on that we feel are kind of best practices when it comes to working with us. The first is use service requests to report your problems. The reason I'd recommend this is that it gives you the opportunity to ensure all the correct details of the problem are provided and clearly reported to us so we know exactly what's going on. You can attach your documentation during the initial creation using the service request utility. Use RunMQ RAS to gather the initial PMR documentation. Like Justin said, if the problem's going on now, look at the must gathers. If a trace is required, gather the trace, RunMQ RAS, get that piece together, get it all sent to us. If you do gather documentation, you've opened a problem, and we say, well, we need this and this and this as well, continue to use RunMQ RAS for future gathering. Why? Because that gets a complete set of documentation. It gets fresh error logs and FDCs that are all time matched to the initial problem or to the problem that you've got the additional doc for. Provide details of support of your supplied documentation. It's great that we get this information, but if we don't know what it's intended to show, it's really it really can be a very time-consuming endeavor. If it happened on your production system, that's nice. If you've gone back and recreated it on a test system, let us know that. If it's a second system involved in this problem or showing the same problem, let us know that. If it's a, look, this is what it looks like when it's stable, let us know that. It helps us because I'll give you a little bit of a, I guess, kind of a reference. A gig of trace for MQ is about 11.5 million lines of information. To put that in perspective, if you take the novel War and Peace, you need 137 copies of that novel to equal 1 gigabyte of trace. Now, granted, you don't have to read the trace cover to cover, but it's still a lot of information to search through and weed through. And the more information we have, the faster we can get you a resolution. And that's always going to be everyone's goal, to solve your problem as quickly as possible. Let us know the object names that are involved, if it's a queue, if it's a channel, if it's a queue manager, whatever. Try and be as detailed as possible when you're giving us information. Share details concerning your affected environment. Beyond MQ, what else is running in the system? How are applications connected? What type of applications are you using? The more details you can give us, the better. Understanding that some of this information might be proprietary, but again, help us help you. Lastly, I want to talk about consider communication methods based on the business impact. Understanding everyone has high demands on their time, email has become a very popular form of communication. And email does allow faster responses and flexibility. You don't have to sit at your desk. However, if you're having a critical situation or critical issue impacting your business, I will tell you that from experience we have found that being on the phone with someone, working one-on-one, will get you the resolution faster on those critical issues. Not recommending a bridge call, but that one-on-one communications where we can take and banter back and forth and explore the environment and try and address the problem is definitely going to be the quickest way to go. And with that, I'm going to turn it back over to Justin.
Thanks, Barry. Let's go to slide 36, please. So we've talked a bit about the kind of information that MQ is constantly gathering when it's running on your system. And we also talked about the must gatherers, which describe all sorts of additional information beyond that, which IBM may need to solve problems, or which you can also collect and look at and search on the IBM site. We talked at some length about the RunMQ RAS tool. And the point of the RunMQ RAS tool is, frankly, to make your life a lot easier. It's hard enough to deal with a problem in the product or in an application or something when you have to gather tons and tons of data and you know run 20 commands for somebody in IBM Level 2 support. It's nice to be able to say, yeah, let RunMQ RAS handle as much of that as possible. Barry talked about how you can take some of the data from RunMQ RAS and from your system and search the IBM site, give some tips on that. And then most importantly, he talked about if you are working with IBM support, what information can you provide to us? How can you make it as easy as possible for us to take your data and spin it into a solution? So having spoken to all of that, let me pass now. Let's go to, I'm sorry, slide number 37. I did want to go through these additional MQ resources. The first is the link to the MQ Must Gather Index, which I had a screenshot of earlier in the presentation. That's certainly going to be your starting point for gathering data for any kind of problem. Next is the MQ Support Portal, which is where you can go. You can find a lot of things here, fix packs and all the rest of it, but most importantly, there's a search engine where you can take things like FDC probe IDs, type them in, and it'll return for you a list of tech notes that match, or APARs and things like that. There's a link to a document about using the RunMQ RAS tool, and a link to the IBM Service Request tool where you can create new problem records, monitor your existing ones, update them, and so forth. Now, as far as actually looking at the data a little more closely, we have a couple of links to some previous WebSphere support technical exchanges. The first is an open mic session that we did about dealing with MQ traces and how to look at those. And the second one is a bit older, but much of it still applies. It's about MQ diagnostics on distributed systems. This is probably the oldest link on here, for sure. And you may look at it and go, golly, you know, times have moved on since V6. Well, yeah, there's a lot that's quite new in MQ. We have publish, subscribe, and we have much more that's been added to the product. But it's amazing how many of the fundamentals of that presentation still obtain today. So with that, let me turn it back to David.
Thank you, Justin and Barry, for a great presentation. Slide 38 also has some additional WebSphere product resources that we hope you would find useful. At this time, we would like to open the lines for questions.
We do have a question coming through from Bill's line. Your line is open. You may ask your question.
I would like to know a little bit more about that FFT summary tool. I've never seen that.
Okay. Well, specifically, what are you looking for, Bill? I mean, it basically goes through those files that we talked about, the FTC files, and it puts the errors or the information I listed there in order of event. So that way, again, when you're trying to determine what or which FTC file to start with, you don't need to worry about it. FFST summary gives you the order and says, this is the first event that happened. Now, like I said in the presentation, watch your dates, because if you have all the information, FFST summary doesn't care. It's going to look at it and say, this happened in July. And so we'll put that as the very first event. That may not be relevant to your current environment. The output is actually, and I didn't mention this, and I do see there was a question asked, where does the output go? The output will come right to your screen. You can redirect that to a file if you wish. Does that answer your question, Bill?
Yeah, and that's located in the bin directory, correct?
Yes, that is. It's located in the bin directory, shipped with the product. And like I said, except for 7104, it works. And if you actually have, here's the wonderful thing. You can take those files from that errors directory and take them to a machine that maybe has 7103, like a test system.
Mm-hmm.
Put in a working directory, and as long as MQ is installed in that directory, you can go to that directory and run FFST summary, and it should work just fine.
And the way you run FFST summary is you actually need to be in the directory with the FFST files.
Right.
And it doesn't take any command line arguments, just FFST summary, and then, if you wish, redirect it to a file.
Right.
One thing Barry was also saying, that it orders things in a time sequence. It does convert all the timestamps to Greenwich Mean Time. So
right.
Depending on the environment that a process is running in, if the time zone is different in different shells or whatever, the date may look a little bit different. If somebody was running in the shell and they had a French language and somebody else was running with German, it normalizes all of that. And if you look at the output that we have, which is on FOIL 33, you'll see that it has a date and a timestamp with like 2200 and 29.955620-5. So 9255620 is going to be microseconds. The dash 5 means that this was reported in an FDC that was showing a central time, that is Greenwich Mean Time minus 5. So a little awkward, but if you want to know what the original time was, there you go. If you also run FFST summary and go, gosh, why are all my FDCs off by 8 hours? Well, just consider where you are versus Greenwich Mean Time. So,
yeah.
All right.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than going through a whole bunch of FDC files.
Right.
Yeah, and in the example, too, that Barry gave, looking at the very first one, that's usually the root cause, and it's very often true. Like in the case of the example on page 33, it basically comes from a multi-instance queue manager that lost a file lock, and therefore the queue manager now is shutting down because it doesn't have exclusive access to its files. All the stuff after the first FTC are some of the other processes in the queue manager complaining, I'm shutting down, I wasn't expecting that. But you can mostly ignore those and just say, the first one, ZXC file lock monitor thread probe ZX155001. Boom, what's that say on the IBM website? And it'll probably tell you exactly what's going on.
Yeah.
The one you usually see is when somebody's forcing down the box. And I can't remember the exact probe ID in that, but it just says the process is not available or some darn thing.
Right.
Yeah.
So that can happen too.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
At this time, I'm showing one more question. As a reminder, to ask a question on the phone line, please press star then one. At this time, we do have a question from Guru. Your line is open.
Hi, this is Guru. My question is, the RunMQ RAS will collect any specific files and with the size? And any space constraints we can run into?
So you say, will it correct any particular files? Was there a particular type of file you were wondering about?
Yes, in terms of trace, if the trace is not on, will it still collect the trace or how it is?
Yeah, when it comes to trace files specifically, RunMQ RAS will do nothing at all unless you do the argument minus section space trace. And trace can be one of many different sections depending on what you want to gather. And then when the trace section is turned on, RunMQ RAS will go to the trace directory, which on Unix is var/mqm/trace, and on Windows it's a directory called trace underneath the wherever you installed MQ, and it will just get all the files that it finds there. And so the way RunMQ RAS, when it's collecting data, whether it's files or whether it's running commands and saving the output, it puts it all in underneath a working directory, and then once everything's been collected, RunMQ RAS then zips up that working directory. And that's why if you have a lot of traces, and they're big, or FDCs that are really big, or something like that, or if you're using minus section QMGR to get the whole queue manager and all of its data, that's a lot of output. And that's why you may need to use that minus work directory flag to say, all right, RunMQ RAS, when you're collecting this stuff, I want you to put it over here because I've got a ton of space. And RunMQ RAS will copy all the files out there. And then once it has everything, it'll zip it all up, and then you can send it to IBM.
Thank you. Do we have any recommended space that we need to have under a working directory? For example, 50 GB or 100 GB?
A lot of this depends on your environment. It really does.
I would say for the most part, if you're not gathering if you're gathering trace,
right,
that's probably going to be the biggest thing. It's going to dwarf everything else. Second to that might be if you use minus section and then QMGR in full caps. That's a section I think that should generally not be used unless you really need to gather your whole queue manager. Those would be the two very biggest things. Otherwise, the amount of space that it needs will probably come down mostly to, do you have a ton of FDC files? If you do, then that could be a lot of space. And if your FDC directory, the top-level errors directory, just has some files, then that's probably not much. Overall space, gosh, I don't know. I could think it could come into be like a system that doesn't have a lot of FDCs and all, probably like a megabyte or two, and then it zips down to even less.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, depends on how clean your system is, how much have you left the FDC files out there. We've had customers that keep them out there forever, and that's fine if they've got the space. RunMQ RAS will gather everything in that directory.
Yeah, and one other thing, too. The minus QMList option. If you don't use minus QMList and name a particular queue manager or one or two, like I say, it will go off and gather the data you've requested from every single queue manager. So you're certainly going to get at least a set of error logs from every queue manager, and those could be 256K to a megabyte per log.
Yeah.
So like, it really comes down to how many queue managers, how big are the FDCs or how many, and how big are the traces, I would say, are the major drivers for how much space it's going to be.
Okay. And one more question is, we have old FDCs, mean to say 2-3 months back, old FDCs, and we have some problem currently. So how to, executing the RunMQ RAS, do we need to delete those old FDCs files, or we can just run it and it will collect the latest FDC files information?
If you run RunMQ RAS, actually, FOIL 19 actually shows the, at least for AIX, exactly what it does. There's a files section at the top of FOIL 19, and it says, here's a path to collect, mqd:, that's the top-level data directory, /errors, detail=*. And what that basically means, like on a Unix system, var/mqm/errors, everything that's in it. So it means all FDCs, no matter how old. Similar on Windows or on IBMI. So it doesn't really care how old the FDC is. So if you do have FDCs going back, apart from the size of the file that you're going to send up to IBM, it's not a problem for us, because if you say, gosh, I had a problem yesterday, December 2nd, and you send out RunMQ RAS and there are FDCs going back to September, we're going to ignore the stuff from September, October, November, and we're just going to focus on December 2nd.
Right.
Sometimes we may even see in old FTCs, we may go, hang on, there is an old error back there that's relevant to this. You know, maybe there was something going on that you didn't notice, and it led to a big problem later on. So sometimes that old history is actually useful.
I was just going to say that the FFSC summary helps us with that. So, we, you know, if you send them, it's not going to cause us any problems. We'll be able to quickly isolate which ones we want to focus on using FFSC summary.
Okay. And last question is, before running to your RAS, do we need to explicitly start the trace or as we are doing right now?
Yeah, for tracing, tracing is really going to be separate from running QRAS. Running QRAS will get your trace files if you have any, but it will never enable or disable trace. It won't run startMQ trace, it won't run endMQ trace or any of that stuff. As to whether or not you should get a trace, that really comes down to the type of problem and what the must gather says. Now, most of the must gathers will say, if you're having the problem right now, if it's going on and you can enable some trace, go ahead and do that. But must you? Well, no. I mean, you might not be able to if the problem isn't happening. Or you might say, well, wait a minute. This is a production system under a lot of load. If I turn on tracing, it's going to add more load to the system, and I might not want to do that. Maybe I want to gather runMQ RAS without traces. Talk with IBM, look at the problem, see if we can figure it out. And if we do need to trace, maybe we won't do a full trace. Maybe we'll do a very short trace, or we'll use some options to try to limit which processes we trace, that kind of thing. So which traces you get, it can be kind of complicated to figure out what should I trace and when. And runMQ RAS doesn't even attempt to do that. It just says if you have traces and you use minus section trace, then runMQ RAS will zip them up for you and send them to IBM.
Okay. Thank you.
You bet.
Thank you. Yes, thank you.
At this time, I'm showing no other questions on the phone lines. As a reminder, star then one.
Thank you. We do have a couple of questions in the group chat. The first one came to just the Q&A group, so you guys won't see this. But the question is, can runMQ RAS be executed against an unresponsive queue manager? For example, if we have cluster queue inconsistency, can it provide more info so we can see the issue?
You can run it. Now, those commands that runMQ RAS then kicks off, if the queue manager is totally unresponsive, some of those may fail. But runMQ RAS does have some technology in it to keep it from hanging, even if other parts of the system are hanging. So, for example, when we run a command against the queue manager, whether it's runMQ SC, AMQ, RFDM, anything at all, typically we have a timeout of 10 seconds. And if that command doesn't come back in 10 seconds, then we just carry on with whatever else we can get. So if you have a queue manager that is hanging, we'll try our best, but ultimately runMQ RAS isn't a miracle worker. And there is a specific must gather for hangs and problems like hangs that's underneath the must gather index. And if you look at that must gather, you'll find that if we look again at step one was generate data when the problem's happening, and step two is use runMQ RAS. Step one on the hang must gather is really big. It describes a whole bunch of things that you can do independent of runMQ RAS. For example, we have some scripts for Unix that can get hang information from a queue manager. There's links to tools on Windows and on IBM i that can look at a hanging process and get data out of it. So runMQ RAS you can try. You can even run runMQ RAS against a queue manager that's offline. Maybe you have a queue manager you don't want to start because there's some problem in starting it. You can't get it running. You can still do runMQ RAS against it. Some of the commands won't work. And for particularly a problem of a queue manager that you can't start, that would be one we'd probably trace. Say, start the trace, try to start it. As soon as the start command fails, end the tracing, do a runMQ RAS minus section trace. I hope that answers the question. Barry, do you have anything you want to add to that?
No, I'm really not.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. The next question is just someone's wanting verification that runMQ RAS will collect and gather all the info into one file.
It will create one zip file, yes. And if you use the minus PMR no option to tag it with your IBM problem record number, then that file will actually include the problem record number. So when you do send it to IBM, either using the minus FTP IBM option or going out and manually uploading it, maybe using secure FTP or something like that, your problem record number will already be in the file name, which means that when it gets sent to IBM, it will get put right underneath your problem number. So one thing to be aware of is if you have multiple problem numbers and you do use the PMR no option, make sure you get the right problem record number, or there could be a little bit of confusion or delay until we figure out which PMR your data is for. And go ahead.
I was just going to say thank you.
Oh, you bet. I was just going to add one other thing, and this is tying into something that Barry said. When you do use RunMQ RAS and you upload data, it is really helpful to us if you do contact us separately. We're going to see your data arrive no matter what. But if you send us an email, if you call us or ask us to call you, if you update the service request tool, it really helps to say, this is what the RunMQ RAS data is for. I just had the problem. It was 2:41 Eastern. The thing happened. Here you go. And here was the name of the queue where I saw the problem. That's just gold because, you know, there's a lot of data in RunMQ RAS, and the quicker we can get through it, the quicker we can get you an answer.
Okay, thank you. And then there's one more question, and you sort of touched on this earlier, but this person is asking, is there any way to run the trace using the runmqras command?
No, there isn't. Runmqras is strictly a gatherer. Trace, right. you're going to have to run on your own.
Okay, thank you. So at this time, we will conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation, and we hope you'll join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, a replay of today's presentation will also be available on this site in the next day or two. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, Barry and Justin, for presenting today.
Thank you, David. Thank you, everyone, for joining.
Yep, thank you, everyone.